his patron goddess was queen. Festival time. 20 years earlier, Alan Deal's small festival had been an almost exclusively local affair. Now, though, with the passage of countless travelers caused by the presence of the Enlightened One, who taught the way of the Eightfold Path, the festival of Alan Deal attracted so many pilgrims that local accommodations were filled to overflowing. Those who possessed tents could charge a high fee for their rental. Stables were rented out for human occupancy. Even bare pieces of land were let as camping sites. Alan Deal loved its Buddha. Many other towns had tried to entice him away from his purple grove. Shengodu, Flower of the Mountains, had offered him a palace and harem to come bring his teaching to the slopes. But the Enlightened One did not go to the mountain. Kanaka of the Serpent River had offered him elephants and ships, a townhouse and a country villa, horses and servants to come and preach from its wharves. But the Enlightened One did not go to the river. The Buddha remained in his grove, and all things came to him. With the passage of years, the festival grew larger and longer and more elaborate, like a well-fed dragon, scales all a-shimmer. The local Brahmins did not approve of the anti-ritualistic teachings of the Buddha, but his presence filled their coffers to overflowing. So they learned to live in his squat shadow, never voicing the word Tirthika, heretic. So the Buddha remained in his grove, and all things came to him, including Ryld. Festival time. The drums began in the evening on the third day. On the third day, the massive drums of the Kathakali began their rapid thunder. The miles-striding staccato of the drums carried across the fields to the town, across the town, across the purple grove, and across the wastes of marshland that lay behind it. The drummers, wearing white mundus, bare to the waist, their dark flesh glistening with perspiration, worked in shifts, so strenuous was the mighty beating they set up. And never was the flow of sound broken, even as the new relay of drummers moved into position before the tightly stretched heads of the instruments. As darkness arrived in the world, the travelers and townsmen who had begun walking as soon as they heard the clatter of the drums began to arrive at the festival field, large as a battlefield of old. There they found places and waited for the night to deepen and the drama to begin, sipping the sweet-smelling tea that they purchased at the stalls beneath the trees. A great brass bowl of oil, tall as a man, wicks hanging down over its edges, stood in the center of the field. These wicks were lighted, and torches flickered beside the tents of the actors. The drumming, at close range, was deafening and hypnotic, the rhythms complicated, syncopated, insidious. As midnight approached, the devotional chanting began, rising and falling with the drumbeat, working a net about the senses. There was a brief lull as the Enlightened One and his monks arrived, their yellow robes near orange in the flame-light. But they threw back their cowls and seated themselves cross-legged upon the ground. After a time, it was only the chanting and the voices of the drums that filled the minds of the spectators. When the actors appeared, gigantic in their makeup, ankle bells jangling as their feet beat the ground, there was no applause, only rapt attention. The Kathakali dancers were famous. Trained from their youth in acrobatics, as well as the ages-old patterns of the classical dance, knowing the 9 distinct movements of the neck and of the eyeballs and the hundreds of hand positions required to reenact the ancient epics of love and battle, of the encounters of gods and demons, of the valiant fights and bloody treacheries of tradition. The musicians shouted out the words of the stories as the actors, who never spoke, portrayed the awesome exploits of Rama and of the Pandava brothers, wearing makeup of green and red or black and stark white, They stalked across the field, skirts billowing, their mirror-sprinkled halos glittering in the light of the lamp. Occasionally, the lamp would flare or sputter, and it was as if a nimbus of holy or unholy light played about their heads, erasing entirely the sense of the event, causing the spectators to feel for a moment that they themselves were the illusion, and that the great-bodied figures of the Cyclopean dance were the only real things in the world. The dance would continue until daybreak, to end with the rising of the sun. Before daybreak, however, one of the wearers of the saffron robe arrived from the direction of town, made his way through the crowd, and spoke into the ear of the Enlightened One. The Buddha began to rise, appeared to think better of it, and reseated himself. He gave a message to the monk, who nodded and departed from the field of the festival. The Buddha, looking imperturbable, returned his attention to the drama. A monk seated nearby noted that he was tapping his fingers upon the ground, and he decided that the Enlightened One must be keeping time with the drumbeats, for it was common knowledge that he was above such things as impatience. When the drama had ended, and Surya the Sun pinked the skirts of heaven above the eastern rim of the world, it was as if the night just past had held the crowd prisoner within a tense and frightening dream, from which they were just now released, weary, to wander this day. The Buddha and his followers set off walking immediately in the direction of the town. They did not pause to rest along the way, but passed through Alundil at a rapid but dignified gait. When they came again to the purple grove, the Enlightened One instructed his monks to take rest, and he moved off in the direction of a small pavilion located deep within the wood. The monk who had brought the message during the drama sat within the pavilion. There he tended the fever of the traveler he had come upon in the marshes, where he walked often to better meditate upon the putrid condition his body would assume after death. Tathagatha studied the man who lay upon the sleeping mat. His lips were thin and pale. He had a high forehead.